Chairs No Waiting, episode number 777. Opie's pal Howie, an interview with Dennis Rush. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the folks over at weaversdepartmentstore.com. Drop by over at Weavers and check out some of the great Mayberry items they have over there, like the Mayberry Man The Series t-shirt. And while you're there, you might want to check out the Mayberry Man The Series playing cards. Those cards are going very fast, and it's a very limited supply. Head over to Weavers and check out all the Mayberry stuff. I know you'd enjoy it. Weaversdepartmentstore.com. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners like you. The executive producer of episode number 777 are the attendees from the Mayberry Meetup from last year, 2023. And the Patreon patron of the week is Billy Lennox. So thank you, everybody that supports this podcast. Thank you so much for all you do. Thank you for supporting Weavers as well. Thank you for being here with me. And who am I? I am Alan Newsom, the host of Two Chairs No Waiting. Huge Mayberry fan, just like you. And wow, we've got a great show for you this week. It's going to be a little different. I've been going through some episodes, but we're going to pause that because I had a wonderful time getting to sit down with a Zoom call, basically, interview with Dennis Rush. Now, Dennis Rush played Howie, Opie's friend, Howie. You know him. He played him on the Andy Griffith Show, and we're going to go through his career, focus mostly on the Andy Griffith Show and everything. So this is a very long show, so feel free to pause if you're, you know, I guess if it's live when you're doing this, it's going to be kind of hard to pause, but more than likely you're listening to the recorded version of this, and you'll be able to pause it and come back and finish up if you don't get to do it in all in one setting. I didn't want to split this up because it was just too good. So guys, enjoy. I know you're going to, and we're going to head over and hear from Dennis Rush, Howie from the Andy Griffith Show. All right. Hey everybody, we are here with Dennis Rush. We know him, of course, on the Andy Griffith Show as Howie, Opie's buddy. I mean, he did everything from float boats down in the basement to make papers with Opie. And Dennis, it is so good to have you here on the podcast. I've been able to meet you over the years at Mayberry events, and it is so good to have you here with us. And
well, Alan, what a pleasure to talk with you and on this somewhat sunny afternoon in San Diego.
yeah, I know the weather. Y'all have rough weather there in San Diego. I feel bad.
The term is boringly perfect.
Oh, man. So Dennis, you have such an amazing story outside of the Andy Griffith Show. I want to focus on the Andy Griffith Show, but you tell everybody the story, because I love this story about how you were discovered. I love that.
Thank you. And it is one of those Hollywood stories that no one believes, but I lived through it. So my dad worked at Universal Studios for 35 years. And in his early days, he was a film editor. He loved to cut pieces together and put them together. And growing up in a big family, if you were good, it was your turn to go have lunch with dad at the studio. So my turn, I'm 5 years old. I get to go have lunch. And my dad and I were just sitting at the commissary. And people are walking by and saying hello and all of that good stuff. And a gentleman walks by and kind of does a little double take. Now, I'm telling the story only because I've heard it 500 times. So I remember bits and pieces of it. But the gentleman is James Cagney, and he is looking to do the movie Man of a Thousand Faces, life story of Lon Chaney. So anybody nowadays, if you've seen Phantom of the Opera, well, that was Lon Chaney. And if you ever saw the bad old horror movie, The Wolfman, well, that was Lon Chaney Jr.
Right.
And back and forth. Well, anyway, James Cagney's talking to my dad and goes, I'm looking for a little boy to play my son, but I just can't find the right kid. And he said, your son is the spitting image of me as a little boy. And when you see pictures together, I look more like James Cagney than I look like my dad. And son of a gun, it just worked out. He took me and said, let's do it. My dad goes, you know, he doesn't read. He's not in school yet. But James Cagney goes, I got it. If you'll trust me, we'll do this. And with that, James Cagney, I mean, would take me by the hand. And as a little kid, it would be, okay, now you're going to walk into this room and that man on the other side of the room, you're going to run over to him and jump into his arms. And again, great, great picture of James Cagney and myself. We were father and son. And he just hand carried me through about 45 minutes of the movie. It was a pretty good part. And we closed with, don't want to drag the story too long on you, but it is Christmas season, and he gives me the biggest red push car in those days. It's 1956. So he says, okay, he's got to put the car away. And James, he takes me by the hand. He goes, we need to go for a little walk. So he takes me outside of the soundstage, and we walk around the whole soundstage. And he goes, now, you know, Dan, the little boy that you're playing, he's not going to see his mom and dad anymore. He's not going to see his brothers and sisters. He knew I loved fried chicken. He said, no more fried chicken. He said, how do you think the little boy feels? And I remember this. I mean, I just gushed real live tears. And he goes, he's ready. Boom. He takes me in. And my closing scene is him putting me in an orphanage. And boy, the camera comes right into my face and I'm a wreck. And I am, the hands are shaking. The tears are coming. And we did it. I think we only had to do it maybe two or three times, but I was just a basket case. Wow. Well, I remember him taking me by the hand, walking me over to my mom and dad, go, you know, he'll be okay. He'll be okay. And he goes, he's a good little actor. Wow. And that was my start. And with that, it just rolled. I was one of those lucky kids. It was 10% talent and 90% luck. Wow. And one part rolled into another part, into another part. But the beginning was with James Cagney, and we remained friends until the year he passed away. Every year we would exchange a Christmas card, and once in a while he'd write me just the nicest note, just checking up on you, how you doing? And he was my other dad. That's wow. All there was to it.
That is, I just think that is an amazing story. I remember the first time I heard you tell it, I was just with my mouth hanging open because it was like, wow, James Cagney just happens to walk by.
And, you know, Dorothy Malone is my mom. Jim Backus is my uncle. These are people you didn't realize how big they were until it was all over. And it was years later that you're going, oh, well, she won an Academy Award. Oh, he won an Academy Award. Oh, he's Mr. Magoo. Oh, no, he's on Gilligan's Island. Just met and got to work with wonderful people. And one that is coming up pretty soon is the Granville, Tennessee reunion of putting Andy Griffith and I Love Lucy together. Well, I was lucky. I did not make it to I Love Lucy. That's Keith's claim. Well, when she did the second show, the Lucy show, I went on an interview with her, and she did a strong, strong interview time, and interviewing maybe 20, 30, I bet it was about 30 kids. And she was trying to mix and match. Somebody was Vivian Vance's, someone was mine. And when I was done, you know, she walked with me over to the, you know, outside because I knew I wasn't being picked. And she said, you know, Dennis, you are a very good young actor, but you don't look the right part. But I guarantee you, we're going to work together. And it was probably about a month, maybe 6 weeks later, up comes an episode where she allowed me to be in her live show. Lucy is a referee, and just the typical Lucy gets into trouble situation, has to dig herself out. And again, so this combination of Lucy and Andy Griffith, I can raise my hand. I got to work with both, so fun time. Yeah,
that is amazing. You got to do so many things. You're on Wagon Train. You're on that. You know, do you remember that? How old were you at that point? Do you remember? You know,
my prime time was probably 8 to 12. And it was just all the cowboy shows of the time, the Wagon Trains and Gunsmoke and Deputy and Virginian. You got to play cowboys and Indians with real cowboys and Indians. just a kick. But I was always jealous of like Ron Howard and Jay North, Dennis the Menace, and the guys that were just always on a show. And when we were talking, they're going, no, you don't understand. This is so boring for us. until you guys, until we, oh, there's going to be an episode with other kids. He said, we were on shows, you know, with just adults. Mm-hmm. But I was so fortunate that I got to be on almost 100 TV shows, movies, TV commercials, but you were always doing something different. So it was like, you know, whatever you had, somebody wanted something else. Well, that was mine versus the guys that always had a full part. But putting Andy Griffith together, was I got to play the same role 8 different times over about 3 years. Wow. About a 3-year run with Andy and Don and Opie. Just wonderful, wonderful people.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, you talk about it at some of the events where you talked about your prime. You're basically over when you're 15 or so.
I think I remember driving to Walt Disney Studio. That was my end. And to be able to work with Walt Disney before he passed in a movie called Follow Me Boys with Fred McMurray and Kurt Russell. And that was my last one. I was 16. But in TV, the movies, you always played parts that were about 2 or 3 years younger than you. So you had the maturity of the 12-year-old and you were 14. But yeah, at 16, in fact, that movie, we did it over a summer. And then we had to go back in because most of the parts that I was in were done outdoors. Well, this was supposed to be 1944, end of World War II time, and a plane has gone overhead or there's noise. So you go back in, watch the movie, the terminology was looping, and you would go in and put your voice back in where it belonged. Well, over one fateful summer, my voice dropped about 2 levels.
Oh, man.
I go in to do the looping for my part in the Walt Disney movie, and they go, wait a minute, you're not the right actor. You're not the right kid.
No.
No, that's me. It's me, but the voice had dropped. So it was at the time where I wanted to really finish up. You know, I was finishing up high school, looking for college, and the parts were stopping as I was stopping. So it was a good handshake. Thank you very much. Never thought of it again. Wouldn't consider it. It's just it was such a pretty package. Come on, start with Jimmy Cagney, finish with Walt Disney, and throw in people like Andy Griffith and Lucy and, just the Ray Walston, Ward Bond.
Wasn't Fred McMurray in that movie?
Exactly, Fred McMurray.
So I mean, if you start going through the people I watched my whole life, I mean, all of these characters, wow.
And it was, you do, you say, wow. And I, to this day, go, oh my God, was I a lucky kid. And, your brothers and sisters did not let you get too big of a head. So they kept you in line. And your mom and dad were terrific, you know, because it wasn't all the time. You know, you had your little league time and you had your kids and your neighborhood kids. And I'll throw you one, Jif peanut butter. God love it. It's still on my shelf right now, but they were doing Jif peanut butter commercial. It was probably 63, 64 at the time. And this was right after Walt Disney had done the Flubber movies. Or whatever the magic was. Well, they tried to link the two of them. And so I go in for an interview and they go, look, we're looking for kids that really can play sports. We don't want a kid that can't throw the ball or can't catch the ball. We've interviewed all of them. Can you do it? Yeah. You know, I'm not the best, but I'm not the worst. Well, got to do 3, eat the peanut butter jelly sandwich, and you could jump over the goalpost and catch the football. Or you could dunk the basketball. Now you're 3'5", and with the strings, they're able to tuck you up and bounce you in. And they go, yeah. So we did the pilot for these things, and they go, yeah, this kid's going to be okay. Do you know any kids that really do know how to play sports? Well, growing up in my neighborhood, I could name 50. Well, they go, really, we need about 30. So one summer, you did 3 different commercials for Jif peanut butter, and all of your friends were the other kid actors.
Oh, wow.
And all of us got a colored TV set as our pay for the end of this fun summer.
Wow.
Of just eating a peanut butter sandwich and playing a sport. But it was really good. And hey, thank God Jif Peanut Butter's still around. So
wow. That is so cool.
I couldn't buy another peanut butter.
No, I can see that too. Yeah. That's right. So your time on the Indie Griffith Show, we see you, like you said, you're on 8 different episodes of the show. It really seems like more in my head, I guess, because I see you so often, and anytime I see a group of boys, I just assume you're in there. I guess that may be it.
No, I mean, I watch it too, and I'll remember, nope, that was a little bit before me. And, mm-hmm. The spoiled kid, Ronnie Dapo, that was just a little bit before me.
Yeah.
But mine was the same with Saintly Miss Crump. And so Andy Discovers America, where it was our first episode together. And that was walking onto a set. And as a kid actor, you're walking onto a set and you're introduced to Ron Howard and to Keith Thibodeau. Now, whatever you thought of adult actors, there was nobody bigger than Opie and Little Ricky. These were the two kings of kid actors at the time and could not have been two of the nicest, most welcoming people you've ever run into.
Wow.
And for that to start, and for some reason, the three of us clicked. And so we were in, I think the three of us were in 5 episodes together, and then Johnny Paul would have a solo episode, and then I had a couple, but Keith and I have still to this day remained friends. Long lost Ronnie as a Ron Howard as a friend, but I sure think of him often and know he's doing wonderful things. I love his stories. So
well, he mentioned you in his book.
Oh my gosh!
I listened to his book. I listened to his book because I listen. I don't read, but I was like listening along. Hey.
That summer, it was a couple years ago, and we're standing out in the parking lot of the bank before the parade, and Clint and I are talking, Ron's brother, and a nice fella, and he just goes, hey, my brother and I have just finished up, our reminiscing of our early kid days in Hollywood, and he said, he didn't let me know that I was in it. He said, I want to get you a quick copy of the book and then let me know what you think. I go, well, sure, I was in, and I'm reading it like you haven't read anything in your life. I mean, oh, I remember. And about halfway into the book, you see this, your name in Ron Howard's book. And he tells this story, oh my goodness, of, now I didn't know, because I know I worked with some bratty kids and some Hollywood moms and all the rest. But Ron was just a nice fellow, really, in every way possible. Well, somewhere the director, and I believe it was Bob Sweeney, and Ron's dad needed to take Ron a little bit aside. And I think it was Ron was kind of so excited about having other kids on the set. But the story goes in his book that my dad and the director take me aside and going, hey, you're not doing it. You're not giving the performance we need. And, in fact, Dennis Resch is the one that's really putting out the effort and really making these scenes work. And oh my God, of all the years that have gone by, why would Ron remember this? And it floored me that, oh, I don't think I could ever talk to the guy as much as I want to talk to the guy if this is how he remembers. But what I mean, for all of the wonderful things he's done for that segment and something, you couldn't tell. And I swear, if it was, I'd tell you, he was a knucklehead or a jerk, but nothing. He was just a good fella, and we were just having fun. So maybe we were misbehaving.
I knew you'd said, and Ron, he mentioned that, I believe, in his book too, talking about how much he looked forward to having other kids be on the set, like you had mentioned earlier. And, so when you guys were on set, you still had school you had to do, right?
And Ron and Keith both remembered they had the same school teacher for years. And I, for the life of me, I'm sorry, I can't remember her name, but she was a wonderful lady. But no, and she had a stopwatch around her neck. And we would be in school right behind, you know, the jail cell and right behind the courthouse. And they'd have the table and the lights and all set up for you. And you would leave your school and my teachers. There were other kids in my school that, you know, did movies and TV once in a while. So it wasn't that big of a deal for them. And you'd go and say, hey, I need schoolwork for 3 or 4 days or 5 days, whatever it be. And they would go, okay, here are your lessons. And you would go in and you had a teacher. And I think at the time, that one teacher could only hold 4 or 5 kids. If there became 6 kids on the set, there had to be 2 teachers. So you got the work done, but it was in segments. Well, just like, come on, normal school, you'd have 2 or 3 classes and you'd have recess, or you would have this and lunch break. So we got our work done. In fact, I know I would continually go back to my school after the whatever program I was on, and you'd go back and you'd be a day ahead of your classmates because of the fire drills and the assemblies and all the things that go on during a normal school. You didn't have that on the set. You had to have 3 hours of schooling. You had to have a 1 hour lunch break. So on set, they really only had you 4 hours a day. And so they really watched the clock, and they got the lights set up. The cameras were all set up. They would bring the kids in. And I mean, vividly remember Andy Griffith. We would rehearse 2 or 3 times, nothing big. You were expected to know your lines, and that's all there was to it. There was work and there was playtime. And the adults on that set were so nice to us. But, you know, you'd work your way through the camera and work your way through the lights, get on stage. Okay, we got it. We're ready to go. Boom, let's film. Boom, back into your schoolroom. And it was just that quick, back and forth. Oh, we only need Ron for a couple close-ups. Great. Well, Ron, you get out. And Dennis and Keith, you continue on doing your work. But yeah, it was just the timing of those things were so good. But wow. I do say play. We would go to lunch. You'd have your hour break. I don't think we ever had a lunch break that was longer than 15 minutes. We would go wolf down a quick burger or whatever. We wanted to get back to the set because they had always had a little area for us to play on. But more importantly, Andy and all the guys, all the musicians that were, half of them were techs, and sometimes it was the Dillards, but they'd break into what we referred to as a hootenanny. But they would start strumming and knocking it out, and then somebody would look at their watch, go, okay, time to get back to work, and boom, wow. It was back to work. And one little one on Andy Griffith, because it was so good, most TV shows, half hour long, would take 5 days to do. That show took 3.
Yeah.
They were so in tune with each other, knew what they wanted to accomplish in that 22 minutes and get it done. But and Andy would go, hey, it's playtime. Yes, it's playtime, or it's work time. And I don't think anybody ever had to raise their voice in the time I was there.
Well, as a child actor, when you're doing that, or even as an adult, I think it'd be kind of hard. How do you balance, okay, you're busy doing schoolwork, but you had to have learned your lines or remember them. I don't know. Maybe it's easier when you're younger, but now, I know, you know, when you try to remember your lines, I'll have forgotten them. Because I've been doing math. I've forgotten. Did that happen, or did you? Well, I mean, how did that go? I can't imagine all the kids were good at this.
So. Well, again, I was fortunate. You know, we would get the script mailed to you about a week early. And you're going, oh, my God, okay, hands are raised. We've got another show on Andy Griffith that was, you know, the most fun script to get in the mail. And my mom was just great. We would sit, whatever that script was, we would read it from page 1 to page 121, whatever it was. So you get, okay, what's the story? But you're looking at lines like they're an abstraction. The lines were really just conversation, dialogue. You know, Andy would say to Barney, oh, what's going on? And, well, Barney would answer back. And, you know, Barney, hey, how do you fight fire? Well, the line with a hose, you know. And
I told you, Barney. Yeah,
they were dialogues back and forth, and they just made sense. You know, Opie charging us a nickel to look through on Barney hanging himself in the closet. it was just dialogue, three kids standing outside a house. So it wasn't that it didn't make sense. Right. I always will salute Andy for the first episode when he gives that long, long speech about Paul Revere and the Redcoats are coming. And I mean, we stood looking at him with the jaws open and just a guy telling us a great story. I don't think any of us had anything to say. It just, we were supposed to say reacting. It all with our eyes and our mouth. Yeah. But he was such a great actor. You know, the camera is on the four kids and Barney, and we're all just reacting. And so many shows I did, that star was in their dressing room. And an assistant director or the script manager would be reading the lines and you would be reacting. And that was the norm. On that show, he must have gone through that speech 20 times.
Wow.
Right beside the camera so that we're looking directly at his face. So he took that extra time and that extra attention to make sure we were as good as we could be. And these are things that just nobody knows about. No one knows, you know, who's reading the line or whatever. But on that show, it was him. And if the camera wasn't on him, it didn't matter. He wanted to get the best from us. And again, you just go on and on about how wonderful he was.
Well, so did you like that particular scene where they're doing that whole thing about the shot heard round the world? Did the kids, did y'all laugh at all when Barney goes, "Oh, get out"? Or when, you know, I mean, when that happens, how do you not react to Don Knotts? I mean,
well, that's where they never filmed rehearsals. Yes, but it was all the time that you could tell, and I still watch it. I can see myself biting my lower lip. Don't laugh. It was just, he did that to you. And, you know, but one of my best was with him, and it was the miracle salve. You know, how do you fight fire? And we did it in rehearsal a couple times, and you could see a different look on his face. And he just took me. We walked 10, 15 feet away from everybody else. He goes, "Now, Den," it was Den. That's the most affectionate term anybody is when it's D-E-N. Boy, that's a friend. And he goes, "Now, Den, you know, you got to punch me in order for me to punch back. For me to be funny, I need people that I can use as," and he would say, "as steps of a ladder." He says, if you give me a step, I can step above that. He said, "So you got to zing me." And I go, you know, Mr. Knotts, it was not Don at any time, and it was Mr. Griffith always. But I go, "But Mr. Knotts, I can't do that. You know, my parents know we do not disrespect adults." He said, "That's fine, Dan. You're Howie." Howie's a different character than you are. And with that, he gave me, you know, that little
extra. Gave you that license.
That license that you, hey, you can be a smart aleck to me and get away with it. Now you get home, you're on your own. But that's how each one of these people, they just took you a little bit and then took you a little bit farther and just made you a little bit better. And for some reason, I was able to play off him like that in a couple other ones when we were back to nature. It was another little zing, but he didn't have to remind me. He just looked at me and goes, gave me the little finger up. You know, "Come on, raise it up one more notch." And these are things you remember and will continue to remember.
That is so wonderful.
Yeah.
And Keith has talked about, you were talking about the Andy Griffith Show, how the set and kind of how the attitude was on the set and how the, you know, they played the music and it was a fun set to be a part of. Keith has mentioned before, you know, like on I Love Lucy, it was not like that, is what he said. He didn't really go into too much detail. But was there a big difference in different sets you guest starred on because you were a guest? So I don't know if they treated you better or worse, but did you see a difference like that?
Absolutely. I'll give you one back to Wagon Train. Ward Bond, you know, big. I think he was 11 feet tall. He was just a giant. Well, the only TV show that John Ford ever directed was A Wagon Train. And I got to be in it. it was a, I had an okay part in it. You know, it was needed. It wasn't a one line where you bounced in and bounced out. But, and I had the school teacher routine. You're right behind the curtain, and the language on the show is a little bit salty. It's not a little bit salty. It's real salty.
It's a lot.
And the school teacher, how powerful they were. She got to the point. Now, I think we took 2 weeks to do this one-hour episode. So I was there, you know, 10 days. Well, I could remember on about day four, she just walks around the curtain, and she walks right up to Ward Bond and John Ford and Henry Higgins, I think, was the third gentleman. And they were in a strong, strong scene. And the language was getting rather rough because they were arguing about how it was supposed to be filmed. And she goes, excuse me, gentlemen, this young boy does not get to hear this type of language. And you continue, I will take the young man off the set.
Wow.
She was, and teachers were that powerful. And they looked at each other. Well, the next day, my schoolroom was in a trailer outside.
They moved you.
They knew how to figure it out.
Oh, wow.
They weren't going to change. But that one, I remember that one completely. And so I know when I walked onto that set, I was, oh, boy, like the little kid is back. And but you were treated as an adult, and you were expected to perform. No matter what show it was, whether it was comedy, drama, whatever, come on the set, have your lines memorized. When the director is starting to mark out the floor and you're going to stand here and move over to here, you're just an adult. You're just one of the people that's making this show successful. They don't have a lot of time to waste. You know it's costing money. So if you flub up your lines, you're gonna hear about it. And, you know, do you guys need more time to rehearse? Do that at home, and you come on to set. No, there were times where they let you know whether you were doing it right or wrong. But again, my mom, honest to goodness, she made sure I was prepared with the lines. Now, as far as walking over here or turning right or sitting in the chair, that was a director, and they just wanted kids that came in, knew their lines, were not a brat, right, did not give trouble, and then got offset because it was, hey, time for another scene. So any distraction to that, well, you didn't get the next part.
Wow.
And when you used to go on interviews, it was so good to go walk in and see a director like Bob Sweeney, who I think I worked for like six times on different shows. So instead of you being, you know, one of 30, he would look at you, hey, didn't we work, you know, last year together? Yes, sir, we did. And, well, you did what you were told. You were on time. You had your lines done. Boom. Barbara Stanwyck did that to me. We did a wagon train. And then like a year and a half later, she's doing the Big Valley. And I went in on my interview against, you know, 50 other kids. And you walked in and she's sitting there. And she looked, didn't we work together? Yes, Ms. Stanwyck. Thank you for remembering me. You know, this is a big lady.
Yeah.
And if she wasn't, she was like 4'11". She was, you know, but the respect that those people got from everybody, and for her to take the time to, hey, we work together. And yes, and when Lucy, you know, was so nice and talked to you that way. If you did what you were supposed to do, great. Don't rock the boat. Don't be a little star, because they really don't want you to be a little star.
Wow. And then if you act like that, Ron's dad will remind him to not do that, right? That's what you said. You don't want to see Ron and him tell you, yeah, I remember my dad saying you were doing a good job.
Or, you know, and Ron, when that happened, he never said boo about that. You know, and we worked on seven other shows after that, but I never remember him being different from one show to the next. Again, we all know we worked with kids that you really didn't want to work with again. And you know, oh boy, you know, this is the one that whose mom is counting lines. Oh, well, my son has five lines and, you know, Dennis has seven.
Yeah,
and
give him one of their lines.
And all of a sudden you don't see those guys too much anymore. And they didn't have time to waste. And I imagine with the cost of production now, I don't know how they do it now. But something happened, and in that show, Opie got into a little trouble once in a while, but he never disrespected his dad.
Right.
And somewhere in that time period, so much was happening differently. All of a sudden, the kids became the adult, and the adults became the clowns.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it happened. I don't know why it happened, but it happened, and we saw it. And all through the 70s, it was, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. The kids are making fun of the adults, and the adults are just the punching bag. They're the laugh.
Right.
And I wasn't in charge. I didn't do it. Had nothing to do with it. But there was something really different in that whole period from the way Andy was treated by his son and, mm-hmm. and other fathers were treated by their son later on. Just don't know what happened, but I think they took the wrong turn.
Yeah, I agree. So on the Andy Griffith Show, you were on the 8 episodes. Was there one in particular was your favorite that you got to do? Because you did have some really good zingers, I have to say. You know, throughout the thing, even when you were doing the Andy Discovers America, and I think you're the one that actually they're talking about power, and you go, "Don't be knocking him." You know, that's just a great line. You know, I mean, it's just one I've always remembered. And you had several of those throughout the series, like with Barney.
Somewhere I wasn't in an episode, but I remember Miss Crump talking to Andy and said, "That Howie is a real brat." Wait a minute. How did I turn into a bad guy? I don't know. When you ask, which is your favorite? I have not been blessed with kids, but I don't know how someone says, "Oh, well, and who's your favorite child?"
Oh, yeah, right. I understand.
Well, each episode was so different. You were so thrilled to get the call. Now, the last two that I did when Opie and his newspaper – I mean, it was really great when, hey, you were playing only with Opie, with Ron. And so we do the newspaper and then the Barney Fife realtor when the houses are selling to different people and I'm floating the boat in the basement. Each one was so much fun to do. It's really tough.
Hard to pick.
Yeah. Okay. The first one that would have to be the favorite, Andy Discovers America. You know, I'll always hold to that's my favorite because it was the first.
Your first.
That was my first love. So,
yeah, I can definitely understand. People always ask me, what's my favorite Andy Griffith Show episode? And I'm always like, well, the last one I watched is probably my favorite now. Because I don't have one either. But I didn't know because I know you, like I said, you had so many little lines in there, just like when Barney's hanging himself in the closet or when he's, there were so many great lines that your character got to do.
And that one when he's hanging himself in the closet, that cute one, we're doing a little rehearsal of the three kids right outside the window. And our timing was so good with Ron to Keith to Dennis to Ron to Keith back to Dennis. And we would rehearse a little bit. And we were rehearsing outside the window with just the director, not even Barney. He's on the other side. And we're playing it back and forth. And I throw in an ad lib, and you did not do that on most shows, you know, because, hey, these things are timed perfectly. And I threw in a line that both Keith and Ron look at me like, where did that come from? And the director said, what did you say? And I think it was, well, he's hanging himself in your closet. We were talking really fast. Boom, 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 boom. I don't know where. I'm sure I forgot my line, whatever my line was. And instead, I zinged this one in and went, oh, my. And all the heads turned. And the director goes, I like that one. Keep that. We kept it. And high up this story, Keith and I are back at the very first Mayberry days were there. We get to go into the Andy Griffith Museum and you're walking around. And I mean, this is like being in church.
Right.
It's just solemn, solemn reverence. And we walk over by the jail cell and they've got a script opened up. Now, this had to be all set up. This could not have been random. And there is the script opened up to this exact scene when we're looking through the window at Barney. And you see the script manager had written all of the different changes to these lines on this scene. I mean, and her script was the Bible. That's all there was to it. You didn't mess with this. But this poor lady had to change the typed dialogue into what Dennis had said and how the reaction was. And when I look at Keith, I go, can you believe that? And we had such a chuckle off of that. But no, you didn't ad lib on Andy Griffith or really any show. You know, those lines were set. They were written for a reason. The timing was there. And I'll only give you the one on Lucy was that the Lucy was a live performance. I didn't do a lot of live. And we're doing the rehearsal, and it's all a big dark soundstage. And I'm doing the lines off of her, and, you know, we're playing against each other, and I'm the brat again. Oh, my God, maybe I really was the brat. But I'm bouncing off her, and she stops, and she'll, Dennis, look at all those seats. Now, they're all empty. It's a big theater. It's like a half court of a basketball, a basketball arena. He said, all those seats are going to be filled in 3 days. And you know the way you're talking? I couldn't hear you in the first row. And she really got you to project your voice. He said, there's microphones and all that, but I need you to really turn up the juice. And that lady, she knew whether that joke was going to last 2 seconds or was it going to be a 5 second. And inside of 4 days of rehearsing, you would get a different colored script. It started with white, right. It went to blue, it went to red, and every day you would have to make those page changes in your script. So by the final day, it was a multicolored script because she knew exactly how long that was going to laugh, how it was going to work, when it was going to work. These were just talents that get lost because everybody thinks it's easy, but it really was a lot of work of working with the pros and listening to the pros.
So, that's amazing. Yeah. Well, I have an experience that you are a part of, and I want to tell everybody about. So at Mayberry Days 1 year, I realized, before Mayberry Days started that year, I realized, Keith and Dennis are both going to be there. I'm going to ask them if they'll do the Barney hanging himself in the closet with us at the Colonel Tim's. So I contacted them, and they were like, yeah, we'll do that. And so we had our Barney tribute artist behind the curtain on the wing of the stage there. And he had the thing thrown over the rafters. So he was being stretched in the closet there. And I had asked you guys, hey, would y'all do that? And y'all can come run out and interrupt me while I'm introducing the next act that's going to happen at Colonel Tim's. I was Floyd the Barber. And I asked them to do that. Well, and they agreed to do it. And I was so happy, but I didn't realize you guys, you can tell what y'all did, but I just kind of expected y'all to come out there and say, hey, Mr. Floyd, there's these. But y'all didn't do that. Y'all were awesome. Tell them what y'all did.
Well, I'm backstage, and I think someone got a hold of Keith, and he was playing drums a lot during that Colonel Tim show. So he was on or off, but he came back around the curtain and goes, hey, you got a minute? And I go, sure, I'm just sitting here enjoying the show. You know, backstage watching everybody, he goes, hey, they want us to remember when we ran around and saw with Opie, you know, Don hanging himself in the closet. Said, do you remember, you know, well, of course you remembered the scene, but not all the little bits and pieces of it. And we're back there for about 5 minutes just going, didn't we do this? Oh, didn't we do that? Oh, well, what was the thing about the nickel? And we're just trying to put this thing together because, hey, if we're going to come out, you got two hams with you. We're going to do it right. So we didn't see you. We didn't, not one lick of dress rehearsals. We said, hey, we're going to do it. Let's do it right. And so we set up our own little dialogue and knowing that you would be right in there with us. And it was like you were the 6 foot Opie. And right. It was like, because yeah, well, we'll give you the nickel. But Keith, it took us all of about, I'll say 5 minutes, and I'll bet it was two, to quickly throw that thing, remember what it was, because it was so much fun. And so then he go, okay, well then, hey, we got to run onto this set. Come on, we're 12 years old again. Well, we're a little bit older than 12. Yeah. But he goes, now, well, you know, the big red curtain was about half the stage. He said, so we'll just come running around. I think we came running around. I think we surprised you for a minute.
Oh, you did. It was great.
What are these two characters doing? But we got right into it. And then, oh, my God, we were so surprised when we came around and saw Barney. I mean,
hanging and stuff in the closet.
5 feet up a little step ladder or whatever. Oh my God, how did they put this together? And we looked at each other and go, what if we had said no? No, we're not doing that.
So great.
Hey, when you're there, you're going to play.
You guys were so much troopers on that. You even, y'all told me, I didn't see all this because I was emceeing the show, so yeah, I was not able to see. But you guys kind of ran around a little bit backstage because you'd be a little bit out of breath, like you were running to tell us.
Didn't take a lot to get out of breath. But exactly, we were going to handle it. We were, hey, everybody else is enjoying and what they're doing. And, you know, the little kids coming out and singing and the little skits in between. That was my first experience at Colonel Tim's. And we were, hey, guys, we're here to be a part of this thing. Let's be a part of it. So
it was so wonderful. I was so thankful you guys agreed to do that. I mean, if y'all had just walked out there and said it, everybody in the crowd would have loved it. But the way y'all did it like you're out there, Mr. Floyd, you're not going to believe this. And you started telling me, so I said, what? Because you whispered it at me first. And then I was like, what? Barney's hanging himself. I said, he's not hanging himself. And y'all ran over and pulled the curtain back, and there he was standing there.
And I don't know if you knew what to expect, but
honestly, for us at Mayberry Days, everybody thinks we get to rehearse. We don't, as you've seen over the years. Everything is just almost ad-libbed. I mean, we know the show, and we understand the Andy Griffith Show, so it's not perfectly recreated, but it's the spirit of it and most of the language. Like you're saying, you guys, it didn't really matter what exactly you said, because whatever you say on that stage is perfect, because that's what Howie, what y'all would have said.
We were in there was a full theater of people that were only there for one reason, because we all had that love of such a wonderful show. And are we going to be just dummies and walk around and, hey, no, let's get into this thing. And it took us, you know, 2 minutes to go, okay, we got this thing down. And we knew we were going to kind of surprise you. But again, as you mentioned earlier, gee, how did you memorize lines? You didn't. You were in conversation.
That's right.
You know, if I say something to you, you're not going to turn around and say, oh, the sky is green. No, you're going to respond to what I'm saying. And then I'm going to respond back to what you're saying. So that was so much fun. All of you, and I gotta compliment you and all of the tribute artists, because you guys all have a different world and you all have different things going on. But when the whistle blows and it says Mayberry, it's like that call that everybody drops what they're doing, and you in a split second can become Floyd. And Christy and Eric, and I mean, everybody can become that character, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I keep saying, how can this thing keep going on? And it just keeps getting bigger. As I see my year this year, I've got 4 events. Now you have 44, but it's just amazing how much we all cherish this little gold nugget.
It is amazing. So we do this year, and you're going to be in Granville, Tennessee. You're going to be in Scottsburg, Indiana. Yeah. You're going to be at Mayberry Days, all Lord willing, obviously, but Mayberry Days. And Dennis is going on the Mayberry cruise with us this year. This is 2024. I don't know when you'll actually listen or watch this, but, I am so thankful you finally gave in to Tanya Jones and maybe Keith helped get you here with us to come to Mayberry Days. And, you didn't have any idea really probably about all this stuff that's going on back east with all this Andy Griffith Show stuff.
I had no idea. And again, when Tanya called, Tanya, 50 years ago, I had a little part in a little TV show called The Andy Griffith Show. I just go, but I don't want to go back there. And who's he? What's that? Right. You know, he doesn't belong to this thing. And you know, and you said it, and everybody, guys, you don't know until you experience in any of these cities. I mean, I only have Scottsburg and Mount Airy to compare to, and I'll be able to add Granville this year to this little bubble of this experience. But again, as I said to you, I had this cherished thing inside of me called Andy Griffith. I just had no idea so many people felt about this. And when Tanya, she hit me, and she has yet to forgive me. And anytime she gets the chance, she throws that little zinger. And yeah, he turned me down the first 10 times I called. Tanya, I had no idea how special this was. And wow. The second time she called, I go, nope, you don't even have, just tell me the dates. And like, I would not miss any of these events if I have the possibility of making it. So
because I know you did not experience people not knowing who you were. I'm 100% sure of that. The other cast members have mentioned, I won't say you, but you can answer your own, but they've all said, you know, they're kind of, I don't know, not overwhelmed, but just like, wow, everybody knows who I am, you know, because we love all the Andy Griffith Show fans that come to Mayberry Days, especially, and to Scottsburg. We know the show so well that we appreciate the joy, the happiness, the laughs that you guys have given us over the years. And we're so thankful to try to give back to you just to show you how much we appreciate it. So
the generations of it. Now, the people my age, okay, we grew up together. You know, you were in Alabama or Tennessee, and I was in L.A., but we all watched that CBS show on Monday night at 8 o'clock, whatever it was, and we had it, and then it went away. But now it's now to the next generation, and then what knocks me for a loop is the little kid that will come up to you, 7, 8 years old, and, you know, mister, can I have your autograph? And then tell you their favorite episode. And, oh, we remember when you guys were in school and you gave Miss Crump a rough time. Oh, my goodness. This thing is timeless. Yeah. And it's just now, to me, there's three generations that love this thing. Mm-hmm. And God willing, there's actually the ones that are older than me. And they come up and they bring their kids, and they bring the wives and the people that get married in Mount Airy.
That's right.
It is a special. And I tell people when I get back here, guys, you will not believe people that I'm meeting. Now, I'm on, I think this is my 7th year. We had to throw away 20, but I think this is number 7. But this is our 33rd year together. And oh my Lord, what, you know, and it only gets bigger. Right. You know, I think, oh, there's got to be a crest to this thing, and it's got to be coming down. Nope. And even the crazy that we had to all live through in 20, we all bounced back.
We did.
First year, I kind of thought of Groundhog Day. We all peeked our head out from the hole, and I was like, yeah, it didn't have the big crowd, but nope, people are feeling good about this. And then that next year, I can remember seeing Abigail Linville on a North Carolina TV station. I was YouTubing around about a week before, and she was just, watch out, this year is going to explode. And it did. And then this year, 23 got bigger than that. Yeah. And it just keeps going. And I hope and pray it doesn't stop.
It's me too.
Too much
me
fun
too.
To share. And like with you today, sharing these stories that my family doesn't want to hear anymore. They go, oh, damn. We've heard that one over and over. But to share these with new people, and you guys make me think of another thing. And oh, some of your questions today was, hey, oh my goodness, I hadn't thought of that in so long. But it's fun to share growing up in what was the golden age of TV as a kid, and to work with so many wonderful people.
Oh, you did. And Dennis, hey, we've been talking. I've monopolized your time for at least almost an hour, it looks like. But I want to thank you so much for just sitting down and talking to us. Folks, if you're enjoying this, he's going to be in Granville, Tennessee. You can check out, if you go to imayberry.com, check out the event calendar. All the information's there. So plan to be at one of these events. You hear how much Dennis has enjoyed himself coming. You hear me talk about it a lot. Come to one of these events and experience it for yourself, because I think you would be pleasantly surprised to learn how many good people there are in the world, because we are often told how bad things are. But then you go to some of these Mayberry events and you meet people like Dennis, you meet people, the tribute artists that are there, the fans that are there, and you realize, wow, there are a lot of really good, nice people out there. And maybe that just will lift you up just a little bit. So I definitely encourage it.
I completely agree with every word, Alan. It is so true. There's so many negative things going on out there. You go to Scottsburg, you go to Mount Pilot or Mount Airy, or you go to Granville, it's a different world. Guys, everybody's got their woes and their troubles and, you know, paying the rent and, you know, the car's acting up. But you go into this town for this period of time, 2, 3, 4 days, whatever it is, it's nothing but smiles. It's nothing but a story. It's nothing but something good all around a small little thing called Mayberry. And it's magical. That's all I can say.
Thank you so much, Dennis. Man, thank you for sharing some about your career. I know we focus on the Andy Griffith Show because this is an Andy Griffith Show podcast. But wow, what an amazing career you had. Your whole story, how you were discovered, and just all that you got to do and the people you were able to work with. I am just amazed and in awe of what you were able to do as a young person. And then you had a whole career after that, you know, outside of acting as well. So, wow. Thank you so much. I just can't say enough. Go with us, guys, on the Mayberry cruise this year. He's going to be our guest. We'll be able to talk to him some more there. Dennis, again, thank you so much.
Alan,
I appreciate it.
100% my pleasure. I'm just talking to an old friend, and I can't wait to catch up with you in our 4 different adventures this year, and your pretty wife, Jan. And again, just guys, if there's anything in your soul that says Mayberry was a positive thing, come say hi.
We'll do it. All right. Thanks, Dennis.
Hey, thank you so much, Alan.
Well, guys, I hope you have enjoyed that as much as I did. What a great time I had being able to speak with Dennis. We actually talked probably another 30 minutes on top of what you got to hear. This is almost an hour, I believe, we've gone into this. So I hope you really enjoyed it. I hope it wasn't too long for you. I don't think it was. If you're like me, you're like, he stopped. He had so many stories. And he told me stories afterwards as well. So, wow. I want to thank Dennis Rush for taking the time to talk with us. Howie is awesome. Hope to someday be able to float a boat down in his basement with him. So, wow. Just a great time. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. If you did enjoy it, take a minute and write an email to me or give me a call at 888-684-8415. Let us know what you thought about this. I just absolutely, it was so good. And I am so thankful. Dennis had been saying, hey, let's do this. And I had just procrastinated and not done it. And I am so glad I finally jumped on this and got this interview done. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. I'd love to hear from you. Give me a call at 888-684-8415. Email me at floyd@imayberry.com or just head over to twochairsnowaiting.com and you can leave a message there. But I would really love to hear what you thought about this. Tell Dennis what you thought about it. He watches the podcast too. So hi, Dennis. Thanks for being here with us. And until next time, everybody, have a great Mayberry week and we'll see you right here on Two Chairs. I guess I talked all the way through the music. Have a great evening, guys. Goodbye.